Hello and welcome to Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. Niaga Spotlight goes through the week in business and future affairs. Market Watch, industries, analysis and insights, we've got you covered on Niaga Spotlight. Well, with tomorrow being Malaysia Day, this week we look at Sabah and Sarawak state economies in two focus interviews, beginning first with Sabah. Now, Sabah is the sixth largest state economy in Malaysia. GDP grew by 3.7% in 2022. With the total value amounting to 81.9 billion ringgit, surpassing 2021's 79 billion ringgit. Now, challenges for equitable economic opportunities include infrastructure, water supply, and internet access and dependability. So, balancing development with environmental protection is also essential to ensure economic growth is sustainable. Dr. James Allen, Faculty of Business Economy and Accountancy at University Malaysia Sabah, and Dr. Janice Nale Hui, Head of Economic Planning and Policy Centre CEDP, also at University Malaysia Sabah, join me to discuss Sabah's economy in this Malaysia Day focus. Let's watch.
Good morning, Dr. James, Dr. Janice. How are you doing? Thank you so much for making time to join us on Niaga Spotlight.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Wonderful. Let's get the discussion started. Dr. James, I wanted to ask you about how political stability will actually be key for Sabah's post-COVID economic recovery, given the fact also that, of course, the anti-hopping law was passed so recently, only in May 2023.
I mean, so far there wasn't any big changes in the cabinet or power struggle or anything like that, which is good. But at the same time, we think about if legislators or politicians are not performing, if the KPI is not fail, then we have no choice but to let them go. But that would need to wait until the next election. Until then, we expect them to just do their job. And the other two components of government, bureaucrats and judiciary system, they stay that way. So I think we need it. We need political stability. And we need to continue to scrutinize our politicians so that our YBs, they are doing their job. We have indicators to tell us whether they are doing or not doing it good.
Absolutely, keeping everyone accountable, right? From there, Dr. Janice, moving on to one of the basic indicators of whether or not an economy and state's economy is healthy enough, looking at some actionable solutions for Sabah's unemployment rate, which at the moment stands at about close to 30% of the overall Malaysian unemployment rate, statewide 7.7%, which is like double the national average of 3.5%. Your thoughts on this?
Well, I think unemployment, especially for the young people, is quite serious. And as you mentioned and it stated, we top the chart, like we are about 29% of the total unemployment in the whole nation. So I think we seriously need to look into this issue. And I think the government has been working hard to address that as well through SMJ, with one of the pillar is looking at the human resource and so on. But I think we need to do more and even more effectively and efficiently in that effort. Yeah,
absolutely. And also tackling the problem of job supply by opening more job sectors and shortcomings perhaps of even broader structures like the Kota Kinabalu Industrial Park. Moving along though, let's look at infrastructure requirements for commerce, Dr. James. How is that avenue developing insofar in 2023?
Here, everyone is talking about Pan Borneo, the big highway and the long highway. The thing is, the other side in Sarawak, the portion, Sarawak portion of Pan Borneo, they already completed it long time. But here, I've been dragged for many years. And we drive to our office every day. We see how it's like, you know, it's just there. You know, there's no one actually working on that site. So we wonder when it's going to be completed. Hopefully soon. Someone need to, you know, to look into it, infrastructure. It's important because this Pan Borneo Highway actually connects our industrial points, from, for example, from ports to industrial clusters. So without that, it's going to be difficult. Logistic can have a problem. It get expensive by the day. And this actually discourage foreign investors and also local investors. Yeah,
absolutely. So there's so many knock-on effects of just one singular massive project being completed far behind schedule. Moving along to another side of the infrastructure woes, Dr. Janice, let's talk about water supply issues and also late completion of water infrastructure projects. And of course, the recently announced allocation by the Prime Minister, 320 million. But how much does that fall short of the total needs?
Right. Before we go to this water supply issues, I think our government has been trying to, I think there is a great issue on the dam, mm-hmm. Yeah, building the dam to overcome the water supply issues. I just would like to draw the attention. I think a few years back, even 2019, there was a scholar, our local scholar, I think Professor Felix, also suggested that maybe we do not need to look into the having the dam because that will cause natural heritage, you know, biodiversity and so on, the fauna, flora that may need to sacrifice for that, you know, building that dam. So I think we have to look into the purpose of having this, the water supply. Are we supplying the water for the people or the industry or what? So I think at the moment, the most important one to look at is for the people to have the clean water. Sure. So for example, we also noticed that at the moment, the dam in the Papa is allocated for 3 billion, for example, and mm-hmm. they also get a lot of kind of a disagreement from the local people. And I think if we are just looking at to supply the usage of the for the people, we can look into other alternatives. Yeah, beside the coastal reservoir, we can also look into, because Sabah, we are not short of resources. So water, you know, we can do those are small innovation type of to have, I mean, through innovation project, we have helped many villages to have the access to clean water. So these are the things that the model that we may look into while waiting for the whatever feasibility study and so on. So we know, because those are not expensive to begin with. Would like to encourage, for example, one village, if they have got that project and got the clean water, they should have that kind of a responsibility, feeling like, okay, I should pay for my water. It's not like free of charge. So with the small payment, maybe cheaper than the one that been supplied, then they can create a fund. And that fund can be used to maintain and also later on to help for another village to have that kind of, you know, water supply. So I think UMS also, we have done quite a few projects in Pintas and elsewhere in Sabah to provide that kind of a water supply. So my humble view is look at what we really want to solve and prioritize. If we want usage of the people, these are the alternatives that we can look into while we are thinking on whether the dam is suitable, what are the costs and benefit for the future and so on. Yeah, so sure. That is my humble view. Thank you.
Definitely important, Dr. Janice. Thanks for highlighting that, considering that at sometimes, of course, the water shortage in Kota Kinabalu alone can go up to about 30%. Moving along from there, Dr. James, when it comes to telecommunications issues, what is the progress insofar, especially looking at household connectivity, which of course then affects economic participation, even the ability of people to have perhaps online businesses and digitalization?
Yes, I agree with you, because particularly for rural areas, our people living in far remote side of Sabah, they need internet, not only having coverage, but also strong internet for obvious reason. The children sometimes can, you know, it will help their children in their education. They can get a lot of information. They also can be part of the internet revolution. They can be content creator if they have, you know, good internet. But for now, they are actually paying a lot for this, you know, very expensive internet, but very slow and not reliable. So that one, I think, there's a lot of rooms to improve. And another area where internet can be helpful to rural area is that they can use social media to market their produce. They can use it also to access to justice. For example, we have a court, a native court. A native court is the cheapest access to justice, other than modern court. So if we can use online, so those villagers, they don't have to spend a lot of money going to the town to appear as a witness, for example, or to just to have proceedings. They can just open the computer or handphone. They can actually run, they can just have a court proceeding.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Dr. James. And I think it's really important to highlight that internet access does not always equate to internet dependability. And Sabah currently, of course, 89.6% of households have access compared to the nationwide average of 96%. Moving on from there, Dr. Janice, let's talk about tourism, ecotourism, and sustainability. And would you say that there has been an over-dependence on tourism as an economic sector, particularly looking at how there has been a lag in getting back to pre-pandemic levels for Sabah? What are some of the main challenges?
I think before pandemic, we look at this tourism as kind of a gold mine and a little bit too much on that. And we have learned the lesson that tourism, yes, they give us good income, but at the same time also have its weaknesses, as what we have observed. So at the moment, on the ecotourism and so on, of course, we are picking up, but we are yet to come back to the level, the pre-pandemic level. And one thing that I must inform, especially from some of the observations, our operator, for example, in terms of the quality of, let's say, the homestay and so on, it's not being truly kept up to the standard. So sometimes when visitors come, that will create, their feedbacks need to be seriously taken into account and, you know, improve from there. So I do hope and pray for that our tourism will pick up, but of course we will look into more sustainable. And, especially our tour operator need to play their part and also being probably refreshes courses to look into the importance. What are the visitors or tourists that come to Sabah that they really emphasize and looking for? So that kind of experience, they are looking that experience, you see. So of course, cleanliness and all these are the basic things, that quality that we need to maintain all time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Dr. Janice. And moving along now, Dr. James, into hydrogen economy, carbon credits, carbon trading. Looking at your specific interests around the environment and conservation, what should be some of the priorities for Sabah while you also move towards having a green energy economy?
Yes. First of all, Sabah, together with Terengganu and Sarawak, we are the biggest polluters. Because we produce oil. So oil producer are polluters, and this one we have to have some, we need to change the way we do things, polluting not only the air, but also polluting in terms of plastics, as you know, plastic made of petroleum. So in that case, our polluters need to think about buying credits. They need to actually involve in the market, carbon market. They have to offset their pollution. Although Petronas, for example, operates in more than 30 countries around the world, they have a social responsibility, not just paying tax, but also to look after, to reduce the carbon emission in many ways. Yeah. So I think carbon credit is a way forward. Actually, Sabah government have strong interest. In fact, federal government already set a market, I think under KLSE, but the initial response was not really encouraging, but I think it takes time. This is a new thing. Our industries are new, they're getting used to it. We have to do, we need to encourage them, we give them some incentives so that they can actually participate.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Dr. James. Dr. Janice, now revisiting unemployment, but this time with a focus on women's economic participation. Women in Sabah, of course, also make up anywhere between one third to half of all unemployed. What are some socioeconomic barriers that you feel would help address and also increase in tandem Sabahan women's economic as well as LFPR?
I think in terms of poverty issue, and if we tie together with women, I think one issue is very important is this single parent, single mother. So we That's have right. the biggest, I think, single mother population in Malaysia. And if we look at that, this poverty is kind of repeated, or we call the poverty,
the life cycle poverty,
poverty cycle, poverty trap, you know what we call. So poor, and then the women, the single mother, then the children also under the poverty, and they don't have that proper kind of education, and then they get married early again, or even they got pregnant before got married or whatsoever, and these kind of things. So this is a cycle, I think, poverty trend that I think we need to address. And I read some of the scholars' ideas, and I think one, it make it very simple. There's a three-step decisions. Number one, you say if the sequence of the success is it to come out from this poverty. Number one, you have to complete at least high school. Yeah. Then you got a job, number two. And then number three, you got to marry before you have children. So these are a few that I find interesting for this simple three step, so that our young women, or, you know, they can be, you know, all this can be reminded, like easily, like catchy or kind of a themes for them to remember. So make it consistent kind of way of life that we must complete an education at least to the high school, and then, you know, get a job, and then you must marry before you have children. So these are simple things that, especially to the rural, so they can always remember and take it with them all time. So I think that will somehow address some issues of this poverty, especially in women, because we have the biggest group of the single mother, poor, and so on. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Janice. And it really points to richer economic investments needed for women and girls' sexual and reproductive health and rights, because that directly ties in with economic opportunity across the life cycle. Dr. James, moving on from there into Indigenous communities in Sabah and access to economic opportunities, what more do you feel needs to be done?
Well, first of all, we, the Indigenous people, Native, we are actually natural entrepreneur, you know. The moment we out of school, we think about how to create our own job. If you go to rural area everywhere in Sabah, you will find people selling, try to sell things to everyone at the roadside or near to the house. So, I mean, those are entrepreneurial spirit need to be encouraged and nurtured. Although government provided many, incentive for them, but somehow it doesn't reach them. It's not that they are not proactive, it's just that they're very shy people. So maybe government need to be more proactive and go and look for them. Not just wait for them to pitch what they want to sell. Self-employed is important because we are now in the recovery years, which means that our GDP is way below what we actually produced before pandemic. That means that the GDP was reduced. When GDP is reduced, it's just obvious. 2 years after that, we are not yet back to that pre-pandemic level. So job creation very slow, but it's steady, you know, it's coming, but not enough to cater for almost 200,000 people who is looking for a job, particularly 37,000 graduates who is still looking for a job at this moment here in Sabah. So if the 35,000 graduates, if they have a way to create their own job, that will be nice. Even if it's temporary, okay, until they get a permanent job, you know, fixed salary like that. We don't want idle resources, okay? Labor is our idle resources. So the longer you stay at home doing nothing much, the more we lost in terms of GDP. So just that, yeah, just that. And also, it means that whoever actually supporting this unemployed person, even if temporary, actually become poorer because you need to share your meager income just to support these individuals, right? So I'm all self-employed, okay? It's a good thing.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for highlighting all of that, Dr. James. And moving on to some final reactions before we end the discussion, Dr. Janice first. Budget 2024 wish list. What should be at the top of the pile for Sabah?
Well, of course, Sabah, we have a lot to wish for. But I think one of it, I mean, we are in the crisis now, like having the rice issue, for example. So I think one of it that can be easily done and given, for example, is you give the license to Sabah to import their own rice. And I think Sabah is more than capable to do that. And that doesn't cost too much. That is number one that can be easily done. And, you know.
Thank you for that, Dr. Janice. And Dr. James, what ought to be on the top of the wish list or actually be allocated towards Sabah for budget 2024?
Well, next year, we need stimulus package. Okay, not just increase in expenditure, but also there's a need to direction. You know? We need direction because at this moment we just muddle through. We are post crisis, but we need some strong leadership to go with that budget.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for that, Dr. James. Dr. Janice, Dr. James, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so very much for taking time to join us here on Niaga Spotlight. Wishing the both of you as well and all of Sabah, happy Malaysia Day.
That was Dr. James Allen, Faculty of Business Economy and Accountancy, University of Malaysia, Sabah, and Dr. Janice Nale Hui, Head of Economic Planning and Policy Center, CEDB, also at University of Malaysia, Sabah. We take a quick break now. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Niaga Spotlight and, of course, covering Sarawak State Economy on this Malaysia Day special. Stay with us.